Well, it is the top of the hour, and I want to welcome everybody to Pit Stop, which is your fortnightly midweek rest area to refuel your drive. I'm Karen Cummins. I'm an audiobook narrator, and I'm the chief cartographer for narratorsroadmap.com, and I'm your host for Pit Stop. With me in the co-pilot seat is my lovely friend and award-winning audiobook narrator, Ann Flosnick, who hosts the Narrator Uplift show here on Clubhouse. How are you this afternoon, Ann?
Very happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you're here, too. Every other Wednesday, audiobook narrators who do more than narrate pull into the Pit Stop. They're sure to inspire you to follow your interests and use all of your talents and gifts. I want to let you all know the conversation's being recorded, so you'll be able to re-listen or catch parts you missed. Feel free to comment in the chat and raise your hand in the app if you want to be part of the conversation, because we'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much for joining us. Today, I am super thrilled to welcome Tanya Eby to Pit Stop. Tanya Eby is an award-winning narrator of over 1,000 audiobooks. She's a USA... I'm sorry, what?
I'm just laughing.
Oh. Well, that's such a huge, huge, huge milestone. She's also a USA Today best-selling writer, and now she's a casting director and producer for Dion Audio. Tanya ran Blunder Woman Productions, where she brought new work to audio. And for fun, she likes to forage and mushroom hunt, and she spends a lot of time cooking. She says she's successful at it 87% of the time. And of course, we want to know how that statistic was derived. But thank you, Tanya, for joining us. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Well, I'm excited, too. And, you know, I have known you a long time, but there's a lot about you I don't know. I mean, I saw you had a double major in college of English and theater. And what was your original career aspiration?
Originally, I wanted to be a professor, and I did do that for 10 years. So I was a professor of writing at Kendall College of Art and Design.
Yeah, I saw you taught a variety of classes. You had comic book writing, creative writing, gender and leadership, writing about art, written rhetoric, speech, and women and madness in literature. That sounds like a fun class.
That was my favorite class that I came up with on my own. So that was really exciting. Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to take that class now.
I should look up the reading list because it was really, really fun. I can't remember it right now, but if I find it, I'll send it to you.
So how did you move from that to narrating audiobooks, or is this something you did concurrently?
Yeah, it was kind of organic. I'm located in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I was doing some radio and stuff when I was in college, some little commercials. And then I heard that there was an audiobook company, and I would listen to audiobooks. I would pick them up from the library and listen to like good murder stories while I was cooking or whatever. And that happened to be Brilliance Audio. And I sent them a demo, recorded one when I was recording a commercial, and they never responded. So I called them, which you're not supposed to do. And I asked if they would hire me, and it was actually like, don't do this. You can't do this now, but this was 20 or something years ago. It was actually that phone message that got me my first gig.
Wow.
They liked how my voice sounded, and they were casting a book that needed someone that had those qualities. Hmm. Yeah. And so then I taught for a long time, and I narrated in the morning and in between teaching classes, and I did that for a really long time.
Well, I saw that on your LinkedIn profile, you were also assistant to the director of development for Carnegie Hall, and you were doing grant writing and event planning research. So I guess you were actually living in New York at that point?
Yep. So I was in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I lived in Detroit for a while. I lived in Florida. Then I did that whole picked up move to New York with $60 in my pocket. And I had grant writing experience, and I had worked at a music society, and I went to a temp agency, and they said basically that no one would hire me, 'cause I didn't have any skills. And as I was leaving, they chased after me and they said, "You'll never believe this. Carnegie Hall just said that they need someone to fill a temporary position and they need someone who has grant writing skills and hopefully has worked in a music society." So it was a crazy thing that happened. And I was there for a year, but I happened to be there for September 11th. And I just, I didn't have any friends. I didn't have a network. I had no money. And just going at that time was too difficult for me. So I ended up coming back home, becoming a professor, and then returning to audiobooks. Yeah, so I've done a lot.
You have. You have, and just these magical connections. I mean, the phone call and then the temp agency that just happens to get the lead of the things that you just happen to know how to do.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Yeah, I don't understand it either. But I kind of have this philosophy that you have to be prepared for luck. And I think that's happened over and over in my career where I have followed things that I wanted to do and got education, experience. And so when something lucky happened, I was ready for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the quote? It's luck is when chance meets preparation.
Yeah exactly. Mm-hmm.
And that certainly sounds like what's happened with you.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, you're back in Michigan in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. and you're narrating. And but you didn't just keep narrating. I mean, you started doing other things and continued to narrate, which is what I always find so interesting is, you know, how people find time to fit all these things in their life. And I saw you had an audiophile profile in 2018, and you said something, I just love this, because this to me is the whole reason that I wanted to do Pit Stop, because you said, it's funny, people perceive that I have a multifaceted life, that I'm doing all these different projects, but for me, it's one life, one project, narrating, writing, producing, blogging, all the things I do are actually one thing, and that's telling stories. Mm-hmm. But in that profile, you said your story began with a lifelong love of writing, and that you talked about your writing. And so at what point did you start or really push writing further? I mean, I know you were teaching it, but as far as becoming the writer that you are.
Yeah, I mean, writing always came first for me. It's something I've done since even before I could spell. Like, people would draw pictures and I would draw books. I would draw words even though I couldn't spell them. So that has been the driving force, and I think it's something that really saved my life and shaped my life. And so it's something I've always pursued. I have not been until recently, it's taken me a long time to find success doing it. And I think now I'm really settling in. I'm not trying to be anybody else. I'm just telling the stories that I want to tell, how I want to tell them. And especially over the last 2 years, something has shifted in my writing that's been very fulfilling.
Yeah,
did that answer the question?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I thought Anne was asking a question.
No, but if I did, I would say, what was the something that shifted?
So something that shifted is in my blogging. I write about things that I'm struggling with or thinking about or feeling. And I made a conscious choice that I was going to be as honest as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. And that one rule for me changed everything. And I think too, I could even apply that. I've had some breakthroughs in my narration performance. And I think it can also be applied to that. Be as truthful and as real as I can be in every moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an exercise, and it does. I'm not always successful at it. But in terms of my writing, I think whether or not it's financially successful, it's very satisfying creatively and emotionally.
Yes, must be cathartic.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I mean, I've noticed that about the pieces you're writing. They're longer and they're a more in-depth look, and they seem like they just kind of flow out of you easily and effortlessly. And, you know, I know when I write something, it might take me hours and hours, and it doesn't seem like it's that way for you. It seems like it's just, here it is. And I just naturally think in this very lyrical, in-depth manner. And I just envy what you write. It's so beautiful, and a lot of it is so profound. And you seem to write about a lot of universal truths that we all can relate to.
Thank you. Yeah. I think what I've discovered is I'm learning more about how my own brain works. And I will have an idea of something that I want to write. And I kind of think about it here and there. I don't spend too much time. And I just let my brain work it out while I'm busy doing other things. And so then when I sit down to write, it's usually pretty ready to go. So I know that sounds a little weird, but that's just my process of how I figured out how to do it.
No, it doesn't sound weird. It's something that I wish I could replicate. Well, how did the Manhand series with Serena Bowen, how did that come about? Because you see, this is the thing, you're busy narrating this whole time, and with 1,000 books, I mean, you're constantly doing the next book. So how did that come about to work with her, and what did you learn from that, or how do you integrate these two things?
So after you recorded quite a bit, it's not that things get easy. Well, they do get easier. But I also felt like I wasn't being challenged and I couldn't get casting directors to look at me in a different way. I couldn't get books that challenged me or stretched me. They were great books, but they weren't, because I kind of mastered the technical process of narrating, I didn't feel as creatively challenged anymore. And so when that happened, that's when I started branching out, and I had my production company. And for fun, on a break, I write things, and I wanted to write some comedic stuff. So I started working on Manhands, and it just made me laugh. The title made me laugh. And I wrote about 100 pages, and then I got really stuck. So I decided, screw it. I'm going to ask Serena Bowen, who I had recorded a book for and who happened to know my husband from high school, if she would jump in on this book and write it with me. And so it's kind of an audacious thing to ask someone, but I knew she could say no. She didn't have to say yes. So she read it and she loved it. And again, timing was right. She happened to be looking for projects that she could coordinate with someone, have someone be a partner. And one of the things that she wanted to work on was her comedy. So I brought the comedy, she brought the structure, and it worked really well for 4 books. And that was how that happened.
Yeah, and the other titles are equally funny. Boy Toy, Man Card, and Man Cuffed.
Yeah.
I mean, just the titles make you smile.
They do.
Well, I love you say it was audacious, but I mean, that's how things happen. If you don't speak up for yourself or make your needs known, it's not going to happen.
Right. And that's what I realized a lot of this, whether it's writing or narration, anything creative, is that we kind of think people should just know that we can do certain things. Mm-hmm. And they don't know it unless you show it to them. So in a lot of things, I think I wasn't being challenged because they didn't know that I could do challenging work. So then I had to do the challenging work to show them. Mm-hmm. And I've done that all across my creative career.
But how did you show them? I mean, because I think that's a question that I know I have and other people may have is, I think I've been telling people what I can do and I've been showing people what I can do, or I think I am, but, you know, it somehow doesn't stick. And I know it does take multiple touches for people to even realize that you're alive because everybody's right. busy and got so many things going on. But
yeah,
you have a secret sauce for that.
I don't feel that I do. I feel like it's some of it's a numbers game. Mm-hmm. The more you try, the more people, even if you get just a small percentage to listen to you or notice you, it builds over time. And still, to this day, there are a lot of companies that don't hire me, like major publishers mm-hmm. that I've never mm-hmm. been hired by, who won't respond to emails. So I'm constantly trying. So it doesn't always work. I do think if you are in a place where you can create content or you can work with someone who creates content, that you have a better chance of showing some things that you can do.
Right.
Well, and just the creative process makes your everyday more fulfilling. And it may yeah. be something that is financially beneficial to you, this creative, whatever thing you've done. So it kind of takes the reliance off having somebody else hire you to do something, because you can just, you don't need anybody's permission to do things and you can just do it yourself.
Right. But it is all, it's very time consuming. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you have to be realistic and like, look at where am I making an income and where, you know, you have a finite amount of energy, so you have to figure out where to put it. But yeah, it's all trial and error, and I'm still trying to figure it out. But it is engaging, so that's mm-hmm. really fun.
Well, and it's so honest, and you kind of publicly show the highs and the lows of your journey, don't you, Tanya?
Yeah, so that was yeah. something, I think yeah. that in narration there, or in writing, there's a lot of shame of being a failure or not being enough. And so what I wanted to show through my writing and my process, that it is just part of the process. And it's a reminder to myself too, because I'm a very sensitive person. So every no that I get hurts. It doesn't feel good, you know?
Yeah, we're human.
Yeah, and I found that the more that I talked about it, the more other people would write to me and say, I'm having the same experience.
Yes.
And just normalizing that made mm-hmm. me feel like less of a failure and that I was at least in it. Even wow. if I wasn't accomplishing everything that I wanted to, I was at least in the game.
Always, yes.
And I think for us in audiobooks, you know, I see comments all the time of people who are in other acting fields. You know, they may do stage or they may do theater, you know, or commercials or whatever. And the comment that I keep seeing is the audiobook community is so warm and giving and generous. And in my experience, that's very true. But I think that because it's a warm, generous, caring community, we kind of lose sight of the fact sometimes, well, it's still in the performing arts and it's still highly competitive. And there are still thousands of other people out there who, well, maybe not thousands, but you know, there are hundreds of other people who are all capable narrators and there's still a finite number of books being published, even though that number keeps increasing dramatically every year. So
yes, and I would,
you know, we
would
forget
concur.
That.
Yeah, and I would say that if you've been in the industry for more than 5 years, already in the last 5 years, the industry has shifted and changed enormously. Mm-hmm. I have some thoughts on that, but there are now thousands and thousands of narrators, where even 5 years ago, it might have been hundreds. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge shift. And I think it is shifting the intimacy of our industry into more, it requires more hustle, thicker skin than we've had in the past. And for those of us that have been in it for a long time, that can feel very personal, even mm-hmm. though I think the business is becoming more of just an actor business.
Well, I mean, I want you to continue on that thought. When you say more of an actor business, what do you mean?
Oh, well, I mean, competition is really, really fierce. There's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so before, and also like everyone has gotten educated now about audiobooks. So now authors want to be involved in the process. They want to have say over their narrators. There's more auditions that are happening, whereas before we would just be given a book. Mm-hmm. At Dion, I don't have any power to cast my own people. My power comes in who do I put forth to audition? Mm-hmm. And then that's taken over by whoever our client is or authors, but everyone's gotten more savvy. So there's more competition from actors who have gotten savvy about knowing about audiobooks, from publishing, like from all aspects. So it's just more competitive and it is a business.
And it does take, as you said, more hustle and more, I don't know, the thicker skin. I keep thinking about that too, because when you said you're a sensitive person, I thought, so am I.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us are, you know, and, yeah. And then to like feel like you keep just talking into the void and not getting any sort of response or not getting the traction that you think you should. It's sometimes it's just really hard to keep putting that foot forward and keep going in the same, you know, in the direction forward, because you're not sure that your message is even being received.
Right. So that's why I think having other things in your life that isn't just narration can be soul soothing. And that has been important to me. And that helps me keep things in perspective. And I'm also realizing now that I had my production company, I learned a lot from that. But now mm-hmm. being part of Dion, just seeing the amount of emails and correspondence and like everyday tasks that casting has to deal with makes me understand that brevity in emails or not responding to some things isn't because they don't like me. It really is because of time constraints. So it's kind of like when you get, you know, like you have a book that has 150 chapters. And if you had to set each chapter up manually, right, and each chapter took you a minute, that's 150 minutes mm-hmm. of time just setting up. So you can think of it that way. If there are 1,000 emails, you can't respond to every email. Or mm-hmm. you can, but you have to be really short. And it doesn't have anything to do with the person on the other side. But as sensitive artists, we want that connection. And things are just changing because of the sheer volume of what's happening.
And it's funny you mentioned that, because I don't answer every email I get. And I had, you know, I did a biography of Margaret Mitchell, who wrote Gone with the Wind. And uh-huh. she made a business. Now, this was, you know, 1936 when that book was published. Things were different. But people, she got a huge volume of letters, and this became her business, was answering all these letters. Nobody's got time sure. for that anymore. And so, I mean, even where I sit, people ask me a lot of questions, and if it's something I can answer in a few minutes, I will, usually. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. usually I can just point somebody to a link. Here's what you need. But more than that, I don't have time for it. And so even though I could answer it, or I just can't, because if I answer everybody else's question, I don't have time to pursue my own agenda. And so,
right.
you know, I see it from my side, but then, you know, I still want all of mine answered.
Of course. And I do too, right? And I want everybody to like me, and not everybody likes me. Not everybody wants to work with me. And that's why having lots of clients and lots of possibilities helps with some of that.
And what are other things that we can do that help, Tanya? What should we be saying, and how should we, you know the whole thing. What do we do?
Well, what's working with me now as a casting director is I do like to know every once in a while, not every week, but maybe every month or so, who's available, who wants work and who needs it. Because I'm getting, when I get a batch of stuff to cast, what's interesting is it's like you read as much of the book as you can, and you look at all the characters, and then people pop up in your mind. And if you need more, then I scroll through previous emails, or I use keywords to search in emails if it needs someone specific. So just knowing that you're available, because I also waste a lot of time reaching out to people who are, some people are really busy, or they're on vacation and booked. And that takes extra time. So just knowing that you're available is helpful. Other things to do, recognize that when you reach out to casting, how many emails they're reading, and try not to require more work from them. So try to keep your emails informative, but not something that requires responses.
And then don't be hurt when you don't get the response.
Yeah, I mean, some of it is, I'm not going to say don't be hurt, because we will, you know, we will be. But keep at it. Again, like, all I can emphasize is how I've had a career is having lots of clients, keep trying, living the life that I want to live, having fun, posting about things that I like to do so people know me as more than just a voice. They know I have some quirks or some expertise, like in foraging and mushroom hunting. I'm waiting for those books to come out that are about mushroom hunting. So
they're coming.
Right? Yes. Yeah, keep at it. But I also think what we missed during COVID, and I really felt this in my career, was the opportunity to go to conferences, to go to mixers. Getting to know people in person is such a huge benefit. And it was something that many of us, especially those of us who don't live in LA or New York, really felt the absence of that during COVID. So if you're like me, I'm an introvert, and social networking is very can be, but I think it's really important. So if you have an opportunity to meet some people at a conference, network, social event, something, you should really find a way to navigate that.
That's good advice.
Renee Chambliss had a comment in the chat, a question in the chat of, how far ahead of time do you want to know our availability?
I mean, it's nice to know if you have availability for books within the next 3 months. So, because most of the things that I'm casting, at least, they'd like them done within the next, 3 months. So if you're not available until January, that doesn't really help me with things that I'm casting right now. But if you are available in August or September, that's awesome.
Are you doing more simultaneous releases? Or are you doing backlist, or is it even mix?
The stuff I'm doing, I'm primarily working for casting for one client. I don't want to share that publicly.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. And most of the stuff I'm working on is backlist titles but at Dion, there's lots of things that are, they have many clients, which is awesome. With some really great books, and some that are new, many of them are new releases, and all of that. So both.
I would think backlist would have a little more flexibility on.
Yeah, if it's a back, if it's a backlist title, there tends to be more flexibility.
And Marcus Zarco put in the chat that he hopes to run into you this Sunday in Chicago at the APA Social.
Oh, good. So here's the thing. I volunteered to take selfies and pictures at the, because I like to have a task. So if you're there and you see me, come up and you can remind me, and that at least gives us a way to talk for a second and we can take a really awkward and probably horrible picture. So I apologize in advance, but if you're up for that, let me know.
And I like your comment about having a task, because I know I went to an APA mixer in New York and I was giving out people's name tags. So, you know, you had to come to me, well, and a couple other people, to even get your name tag for the event. So it was a great way to be able to say at least hi to people. And I'm a total introvert with you. I'm like, yes, give me a task that I can focus on that, and then that'll take care of everything.
Yeah. Or tasks really help me, but also if you can find a friend who's an extrovert. So my friend Amy McFadden, she's a total extrovert. Like, she is charged by people. So we go to an event and we kind of go together as a buddy system, or we have a couple more friends. And then we can introduce each other to people that we've worked with, and it just takes a little pressure off. So that's another tool that you can use going to these events as a team.
Yeah, I should find the link of the little video you and Amy did where she was wanting you to cast her for a book without giving away what you actually did. That was so funny. I'm going to find that and put it in the chat while other people talk. But I want to ask you about, you were on the Netflix Nailed It holiday. And I know you love to cook, and I've seen many of your cooking videos. How was the audition process for that? How did you even get on that show? Speaking of funny, that was pretty funny.
It was one of the best things I've ever done. So I watch all the cooking shows, like literally all of them. Iron Chef, Master Chef, like all the cooking, like everything. And my kids, we were watching Nailed It, and they said that I should go on that show because it's for terrible bakers, because I could never be on any other cooking show. And we all laughed, ha 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 ha. And so I went to my computer and I did a search, and they just happened to be casting. And I said, so I found the casting link, and they had a really lengthy application. But I was able to use my writing skills to be funny, I think. They responded right away and cast me. They cast me, actually, I was at the Audies, I think, with Nevertheless We Persisted people. I was in the final bit of casting, and they decided to have me on the show. And we finished with the Audies. I went home for a day, and then I flew out and did the show. So,
wow.
Yeah, that was just another thing. Like, I do this a lot where it's like, if I want to do something, then I research it and then I just try. I have applied to the Great American Bake Off and other things that hasn't worked out. And you just don't hear about, you only hear about the one that did. But
it's a big one, though. It's a big one.
Yeah, it was a big one.
Yes.
Yeah. So I just try.
Yeah. And you really succeed. Now, what about, is Blunder Woman kind of on the back burners for now?
It is. When I decided to open it back up, so I've noticed a big drop in my narration work, especially over the last year. And I also, after 1,000 books and 20 years, I'm also fatigued. And so, and the hustle is hurting me more than it used to. So I opened Blunder Woman Productions back up, but and I had some clients that we were working on getting things going, but it wasn't happening fast enough. So the Dion opportunity came up, and I think Karen, you told me about it, which was awesome.
Yeah, I'm so excited that worked out for you.
Yeah, and it's a perfect fit. So it takes some of the pressure off, and now I don't have to do as many narration titles, and I can kind of give them more focus and energy. And then I have casting is very creatively engaging. I find it really fun. And the Dion people, they're really easy to work with and fun, and I'm excited. It feels like the right turn. But running Blender Woman Productions would be a conflict of interest. And
Yes.
so that's going to take
Okay. Yeah.
it'll take the back burner, at least for having other clients, but I'm still leaving that open to create original content like I did with the Nevertheless We Persisted. I still think
Oh.
about doing another book or a community performance.
Oh, good. Oh,
So
yeah.
that
Yeah.
is in the
Yeah.
back of my mind too.
Oh, that's great. And before we that you answered that perfectly. But when you said about the hurt of the hustling, can you tell us more about that? Because not everybody has all your years of experience in the trenches, really.
Oh, well, and I think part of it is that I've been in it so long, so the grumpy part of me is it's hard to have to hustle as much as I did when I was first starting. But because it is more competitive, I have to do all of the same work and reach out to get those jobs. And I
Yeah.
just felt like just lately, just where I'm at, that the no's were hurting me more than they used to. Yeah, so I think I just needed a little rest maybe from it.
Yeah, you actually you wrote about that recently on Substack about how it just kind of felt physically hurtful to you that you're having to still hunt people down, so to speak, to land work, and it's just a repetitive cycle of it.
Yeah, I just it's felt lately like I'm just having to convince people that I'm worthy. And that just hasn't felt great. So I'm trying to get in a better headspace, and now that I'm casting, I do realize just how many people are like I'm shocked every time I get a batch of people responding how wonderful everybody is. And it's like any of these people could perform this book. Anybody could, any of them, because everyone's so great. And why one is chosen over another is still a mystery to me.
And the experience part of it seems to almost be less and less and less, I feel. Yeah. Because I don't know, maybe the whole trajectory of what we do is just so accelerated now, because as people seem to start, they're hitting the ground running, they know how to, run all the machines and do all the things and who the best coaches are. I've been it so long, we didn't even have computers. So, but it's true, So yeah, and it's the attrition of it, I feel, anyway, for all my years, for all the reasons that you say, and just that fact of, well, here we go again. And it's yeah, every day you start out as if it's your first day, but it isn't, and you just get weary, I suppose, at points.
But
So
I
I don't
think
know.
that can happen with any career too.
Anything.
And it is something I'm very aware. Like I do lots of things, but I don't do them forever. Like I was writing lots of little tiny poems, and that was a thing I was really excited about. And then I kind of lost interest. It doesn't mean I won't go back to it. I might. Or my
I
videos.
love
It's
your
just
tiny
like
poems.
I love them too. And I probably will go back to them. It's more like I enjoy trying and mastering new things. And so I like to change it up every now and then. And the same has been true with my career, which, so when I felt like I had mastered a certain level of narration, that's when I started producing. And then that's when I started creating original content. And now I'm doing casting. So again, it is all the same stuff, but in a slightly different
Angle, kind of.
Yeah, angle or timbre, right? Like a different sound, a different feel to it.
Yes. And I'm the exact opposite to you, Tanya. You know, put in the same time and just the one focus, literally, the one focus. But then I say to myself, well, yeah, I mean, but it wasn't just one focus because the whole thing keeps changing anyway. And if you have to learn computers and then learn how to use Pro Tools or whatever, you know, all these things. So it doesn't let you just remain. If you just wanted to do the one thing and master narration, which for me is quite enough.
Right.
The industry doesn't let you just do the one thing, but then you magnify that with really creating other things. And I so admire that and must take a leaf out of your book sometime. Or think about it anyway. But even thinking about it feels like a betrayal. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it can be anything that keeps you engaged. It could be like maybe you want to start running. I don't know why someone would want to do that, but maybe that's the challenge, right? Like,
yes.
Or it's learning a new recipe, or it's going on a trip somewhere to a place that you've never been. Like, these are all things that can energize us besides career stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fabulous. Energizes the word.
And I want to remind the audience, we're coming up on the end of the show. So if you've got questions or comments for Tanya, definitely raise your hand and we'll call you up to the stage. I have a question for you, Tanya. This is what I like to call the pit stop hot seat. And I would like to know, what is your most trivial, useless, or flat out counterproductive superpower?
Oh. what's a superpower that that's obvious. Like, my Twitter handle is Blunder Woman, because I'm really awkward and I make a lot of mistakes. So I decided a long time ago that instead of fighting it, I was going to embrace it and I was going to make it my superpower. So I'm really good at tripping and making mistakes and being a little bit awkward.
Well, you say that, but I haven't actually seen you do those things.
Yeah, I do it all the time. I have to eat with a bib. So,
well, now there's nothing wrong with that because I don't, you know, I do that too, although not an official bib, but you know, I'll tuck the napkin in because I don't want the stuff on my shirt. So,
right.
There's that to me is absolutely normal behavior. Well, I have another one.
Okay.
What is your strangest possession?
My strangest possession?
Yeah, that you want to talk about. You may not want to talk about it.
I'm looking around my house. I think I have a bit of an obsession with paint by numbers.
Oh.
So it's not really a strange thing, but there's probably 20 paintings in my house and they're all paint by numbers.
Oh, I think that's so cool. Yeah.
I find
I started
relaxing.
Doing one because you inspired me, but it's so complicated and it gives me a headache every time I try to work on it. So, I mean, it's probably been a year and I haven't gotten even half of it done.
So if it's too complicated, I move on and like I order a size up. So that they're not so tiny. The numbers aren't so tiny. But yeah, that's something that I have a lot of, these pictures in my house.
I remember that springtime in New York one that you did. That was so pretty.
Thank you.
Well, I see Andrea All wants to ask a question or say hello. So I'm sending the microphone to her.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Tanya. I'm so thrilled to speak to you. I love that you just said you're kind of a, I hope you don't mind me rephrasing, kind of a klutz. Would that be accurate?
Totally.
Okay, me
that
too.
That is accurate.
Mm-hmm. My brand is perfectly imperfect, so I'm I'm with you. So I have a question. I think I did write to you on LinkedIn, and I told you I got invited to be on the Dion roster, but I'm paralyzed filling out the form because you get one sample, and it says on there, cannot be edited, can never be, no, it doesn't say can never be changed.
Never.
But I mean, I feel I'm like, oh my God, how do I just send one that, and, you know, like you were saying, you want to know, you know, if I would be right for this or that. And I'm, like I said, I'm paralyzed. So can you help?
Yeah, sure. First of all, you don't need to be paralyzed. I would just fill okay. it out to the best of your ability and let it go.
Okay. Okay.
Remember that databases or databases, uh-huh. For the most part, there's so many people on them. What I'm learning, and I'm still learning, is that they're a good tool for getting contact information or doing some basic searches. But okay. what is more useful is getting to know you as a person.
Ah,
so,
okay.
Fill out the roster so that you're all legal and you're in the database.
Okay.
And then send a follow-up email and then email with availability every 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
And maybe in that email, you have some of your skills, maybe your cultural background, any languages or anything that you just love to narrate. Or hate to narrate. And that's how you offset that. So don't be scared by don't be scared by the computer. It's okay.
Okay. All right.
Well, thanks, Andrea. Is it Andrea or Andrea? Well, I guess she doesn't hear me. But anyway, that's a really good question because we don't know how to fill out forms, and then how do you pick out the one sample that best represents you? So that's some great advice. Barbara Hensley had a question in the chat. Barbara, did you uh-huh. want to come ask it personally? Because I can, if I can find you here in the audience, I can.
Thank you guys.
To speak. Thanks, Andrea.
Okay. Thanks. I'm sorry, you guys, I lost sound, but I'll go back and listen to the replay. Thanks.
Thank you.
So I sent the mic to Barbara.
It says she's at work.
Oh, she says she's at work. She wanted to know if you've ever been pranked, or have you ever pranked anybody?
No, I'm not a prank person. I like things that are true. So things that aren't true, I don't understand it. I don't understand April Fool's Day. Like, people love that. but I'm just like, I'm leery. I'm suspect of pranks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm also, you would think I'm like a terrible liar. Like, I cannot lie. I can act. And if I have a script, I can make something believable. But on my own, I'm just awful at it.
Well, I'm wondering, with all the things that you are doing, do you have an assistant or other help, whether it's a virtual or a physical assistant?
No. Sorry, that's funny. No. Oh my gosh, what that. I wouldn't know what to do with that. That would be amazing. No, it's all me doing my own stuff.
Now, tell us how your days go now, Tanya, because aren't you an advocate or a proponent or whatever the word is of getting up early in the morning?
So I'm a freaky morning person, which mm-hmm. means I wake up naturally without an alarm, probably around 4:45, 5 Ooh. In the morning. Mm-hmm. And I check my email. And then right now I still have a couple of books to narrate. So I narrate for a couple of hours. And then I do Dion work. Mm-hmm. But the problem with being a morning person is by 6 o'clock at night, I'm done. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of my daily routine.
Because you have two kids, and mm-hmm. but I guess they're teenagers
they're
and
now.
Are kind of
yeah.
self-sufficient.
Yep. Yeah, but I did the whole narration thing as they were growing up, and they've mm-hmm. learned to walk quietly, although their idea of walking quietly is not my idea of walking quietly. mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a lot to manage.
Yeah.
And I think you're, I think you're going, isn't it, to the American Library Association conference? Didn't I see that you and Deborah are going to that? Or did that just happen?
No, that's a thing that's happening this weekend. I'm only going to be there for part of it. I'll be there Saturday or Sunday and Monday. I'll be there for the mixer.
And then
stuff on Monday, but the Dion team will be there. They are casting a lot of books. So, meeting the team is a benefit, I think.
Yeah, I went to the ALA meet. It was a midwinter meeting in Atlanta in 2017. And that was really a beneficial place for a narrator to be because there weren't other narrators. You know, the audio publishers were there to talk to the librarians and the. And so I was able to actually, I talked to Deborah for a good bit that day. And you know, when they're on break between sessions, you might be able to schedule some time. So I would encourage anybody who could get there to go. Mm-hmm. I see that Jenny Shineman, I hope I'm saying your name right, has a question. So I am sending the mic to you.
Jeannie.
You got it. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi, Tanya. I know Tanya in real life, but this is something I don't know about you. So I thought I'd ask. I know that you like to watch horror movies, and I wondered if you also like to listen to them in audiobooks or like to narrate them.
Yes, to all of the things. I don't get cast in them very often, and I think as I've listened to my voice, I think I might just sound too cheerful. I'm delighted. I'm literally delighted by horror movies and horror stories. So I think I sound maybe too excited and happy. But I listen to all of the things, watch them, listen to them. It's great.
Is there such thing as cozy horror? Maybe that would be a good niche for you then.
I know, right? Maybe I should explore that.
Yeah. All right, Tanya.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yes.
Great. Well, I just thought I'd pop up and say hi, and I never knew that about you, so thought I'd ask. So.
Well, it's a great question. Thanks for asking. I think her name is Evelina Voce, and forgive me if I mispronounce that, but I'm sending the mic to you for a question. Oh, so it says Evelyn. So it didn't show up for me correctly. So Evelyn, that makes much more sense. You'll have to tap your microphone in the lower right corner to unmute yourself. There you go.
Got it. There I am. Hi, Tanya. We've communicated once or twice on LinkedIn. I am relatively new to the audiobook world, and it's exploded for me. I have 11 books right now.
Awesome.
And I wanted your advice on how to manage multiple narration projects.
Do you mean you're recording them at the same time or in a queue?
In a queue.
And what do you mean by manage them?
Well, I'm starting to feel a little overwhelmed by them because I didn't expect to have that many books to do this summer. So I just want to, you know, do it in a sane and reasonable way so that I don't burn myself out.
Yeah. So that is something that happens to most narrators when you reach, it's like a tipping point, right? And so what is helpful is if you can figure out what can you comfortably narrate, how long can you, like, what's your total runtime that you can comfortably narrate in a day without stressing out your body, your mind, your spirit.
And which I think I know, which is good.
Okay. Do you want to share what that is?
Sure. I usually do it in about 2 hour stretches, and I can do up to 4 or 5 hours in a day.
Okay. So you can, but that's not your total runtime. You can record for 4 or 5 hours a day.
Right.
Yeah. So, what's going to help you is figuring out how many minutes you can actually record during those 4 or 5 hours. If you can record a finished hour, like an hour a day, do you do 2 hours a day? Do you do 2.5 hours? And the reason why I say that is because it's going to help you when you look at how much you have to record to know what your goal right. is every day. So when you have yep. a long queue, basically what I do is I hit my page goal and then I stop. And that's the hardest mm-hmm. thing because you feel like yes. you can keep going, right?
Yes, yes.
But to stop yourself, to stay in balance, you know, hitting your goal is awesome. And that's enough. Mm. So okay. that's going to give you the ability to continue narrating, not blow out your voice, be grounded, be connected, and be consistent.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I would also, during your breaks, get some physical movement, go outside for a couple of minutes, do something. Mm-hmm. And then make sure that you have time with your loved ones, do some stuff that doesn't require brain work, you know, relax, recharge.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just got back from a vacation, so.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I'm trying to get back in the groove. Thank you so, so much. That helps a lot.
You're welcome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Great question. Well, we are fast climbing up on the end of our time. Tanya, do you have any advice for people who want to branch out beyond narration and, you know, add more to their life, just as you've been doing?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I realized pretty early on as a freelancer is that I didn't need to ask permission. Mm-hmm. So if there are things that you want to do or try, you don't have to ask anybody. You can just do it and try it. Yeah.
Well, I love that. That's great advice for all of us, that you don't need to ask anybody's permission or get their approval.
That's right. You want to do something? Then why aren't you doing it? Do it. Do it. And you know, sometimes things work out and sometimes they don't. And there's nothing to be ashamed of. You're learning, you're stretching yourself. It's awesome.
Well, that is great advice and sounds like a perfect ending note. Do you have any other final words or anything you want to plug? And how should people contact you?
Contacting me via email is the best. And that is tanya.eby@dionaudio.com. Make sure you add me to your contacts because some of folders.
We lost your audio there for a second. You said be sure to add to the contacts. And then we lost
because some of my emails have been going into people's spam folders.
So she can't offer you a job if your email right. doesn't reach you. So
right. So follow up with email. You can let me know that you listened to this. I have a list of people I'm trying to keep in mind for the next batch, which I hope to get any day now.
Well, that sounds exciting for all of us. But we have exhausted our time with you, and I want to be respectful of that. So I'm going to conclude today's pit stop. The recording is going to be available on Clubhouse later today, and next week sometime I'll post it with a transcript and her links on Narrator's Roadmap. And who's coming up tomorrow on Narrator Uplift?
Johnny Heller and Giovanna Perrin.
Well, that should be a great conversation.
Yeah, yeah. I saw them down in Fredericksburg talking about meeting people, Tanya, making the effort. Drove 90 mm-hmm. miles. Yeah, but mm-hmm. that was kind of doable. So, yes.
So you did it.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah,
well,
Yeah.
Well, I hope all of you will take another road trip with us on July 5th. When we do another pit stop picnic. I want to do one of these kind of shows every quarter, and that seems like a good time. A lot of people have July 4th vacations, but the audience can come with your topics and we'll all have great fun discussing them. But in the meantime, I hope you find joy in every journey and live the life of your dreams. Thanks again so much, Tanya, for this fantastic conversation.
And awesome. Thanks. It was really fun. Thanks, everyone.
And thanks to Anne Flosnick for all your great questions and support. and to all of you in the audience for spending time with us today. We really appreciate it and wish you all well, and we will see you soon.